So we are holding on Nun Ches Amud Aleph, about the middle of the Amud, line meaning the Me'ara. We started discussing the question, first of all, we were discussing the issue of can an animal that became, an animal or a bird that became Tshefa, is it able to give birth? Which we discussed, the different explanations of the Rishonim. Do we mean whether it can become pregnant? Do we mean whether it can carry a full-term pregnancy, etc.? We said Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov had said that yes, Tshefa Yeledes. Mm-hmm. And based on that, we mentioned, we brought a din of Amemars, that if you have a bird that became Tshefa, so the eggs that it was carrying that hadn't yet fully developed inside it at the time are all osir because uber yarach imayhu, they're considered part of the mother, so when she became Tshefa, so did they. After
Hold
that...
One second. We had a principle... Yeshlam Shasakosha.
Yeshlam Shasakosha has nothing to do with it. So
because
it has nothing to do. These eggs were inside the mother. These eggs were inside the mother and are considered part of it. You have a general concept in halacha called the uber yerach imayhu, that a baby is considered an extension of its mother. So therefore, when this mother became Tshefa, and you could say the same thing about the mother, it also had a Shasakosha. The fact is now it's Tshefa. So the eggs that she was carrying at the time are Tshefa. Afterwards, any eggs that develop later, so we said it depends. If those eggs, so Amemar had said, if those eggs are fertilized, then they're mutter on the grounds of Zevezeh Gerdim, because you have two factors that work together to create them. You have the mother, you have the mother produce the eggs, and the father, the rooster, fertilize them. On the other hand, if they were unfertilized eggs, right, that's the point. As opposed to if you have unfertilized eggs, and Amemar had said, then they would be osir because you only have the one, because you only have the one parent then, because unfertilized eggs are only from the mother. Okay, so we discussed in that regard a machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where you have an animal that became treif and it was carrying a baby at the time. Can the baby be brought as a korban? We ended up saying that the machlokas is not really fundamentally about using it as a korban. The question is more fundamentally, would it be mutter, where Rabbi Eliezer would say no on the grounds that he holds Zeb as a gerim as osir. You have the two factors, the mother and the father, work together to create this baby. As long as one of them is osir, Rabbi Eliezer says it's osir. Therefore, he'd say the baby is osir even to eat, let alone to use as a korban. And Rabbi Yeshua would say it's mutter to eat and even to use as a korban.
On
the basis because he holds Zeb as a gerim as mutter. Okay, so all of that is one way of explaining.
He agrees.
There's a machlokas on the question, according to this version that we just learned, there's a machlokas on the question Zevezeh Gerdim. When you have two factors, one of which is osir and one of which is mutter, that combine together to create something, is the product osir or mutter? Rabbi Eliezer would say no, and therefore you can't even eat the baby animal. And Rabbi Yeshua would say yes, and therefore you could, and you could even use it as a carbon. So now, continues the Gemara, so we're about the middle of the Amud, line against Me'ara. Rav Acha Sovalok Rav Acha by Yaakov. Now, we have two different versions among the later Amiroyim. Rav Acha holds like Rav Acha by Yaakov, who said at the bottom of the previous Amud that a Tshefa bird is able to bear live young, or in this case to be able to lay eggs. And therefore, he explains Amemar's case as the case that as we just described, that we're talking about the mother definitely became a Tshefa. The question, therefore, is about the first batch of eggs versus the later batches of eggs. Because, in other words, according to that principle, it is possible, even though the mother is Tshefa, it's possible for her to incubate and eventually to lay a new batch of eggs that start developing, where their development starts after she became a Tshefa and eventually are laid. Okay, that was one version. Ravina loisav alakid Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Ravina does not agree with Rav Acha bar Yaakov. He says that no, a Tshefa is, as we had an opinion in a Braisa yesterday, that a Tshefa animal or bird is not able to give birth, or in this case, in the case of a chicken, is not able to carry eggs to full term and lay them. Therefore, according to Ravina, there's no possibility where this bird became a Tshefa, and you're talking, what about the eggs that it laid later on, and you have to talk about the din again. However, he still agrees that Amemar said his din. So he learns Amemar's din, the distinction between the first batch of eggs that it was carrying at the time versus the later ones, is a valid distinction, but he understands the distinction to be different, like this. He learns, Amar Amemar, high-bayed Suffolk Tretha. We're not talking about a bird that became definitely a Tretha. We're talking about one where there was a Suffolk, whether it's a Tretha. Where we said that if it lives for 12 months or it gives birth, then we know that it's kosher. So the shichla kama, so the eggs from the first batch, the ones that it was carrying at the time that the incident occurred, mashinim lehu, we have to keep these eggs on a side. We can't eat them, but we don't have to necessarily throw them to the dogs or otherwise not be able to eat them. We hold on to them. And we wait and see what happens. E hodra batana, if the hen then starts developing a new batch of eggs, and according to the Rishonim who say that the point is that a trefa can't give birth, then it would mean she has to go through the entire cycle of eggs developing and taking the 21 days to develop and laying. And then, in that case, shali, and then the original batch of eggs that we were holding on to are mutter, because then we know that after all, the bird was never trefa in the first place. Be'iloi asiron, and if the hen is not able to go through, it is not able to start developing a new cluster of eggs, or it starts developing them and they don't get laid, as the case may be, then we know that the first batch of eggs are also, because then it means that the bird was trefa all along. So not, again, the first version of a maimar.
It can never be an exception to the case that...
Well, coins, right, that a trefa is not able to give birth, right, so therefore, right. So again, according to the first version, it was a question of, we know the mother is also. The only question is, can the eggs be mutter on the grounds of Zebezeg Gordon? Now, in this version, we're saying we don't know whether the mother is mutter or not. Seeing that it's able to develop and lay eggs shows that it was never a trefa in the first place. So, Eisver of Ashi Lan Meimar. So now in the second version, Rav Ashi asks a Meimar, as he did in the first version at the top of the Omud. We have a Mishnah that says, the Shavin, that they, certain Tanoim, before we had the Shavin here, it's Umoidim, the base of Trefa, they agree regarding the egg of a Trefa. Who's the they? Rashi said it's Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Shua. Tosva says it's the Shammai and the Philip. Anyway, they agree about a bird of an egg of a trefa bird, chasura, because that is also mifnesha gabla beisur, because it grew inside the chicken at a time of isur, which seems to imply the word gabla seems to imply that it's able to go through this entire growth cycle after the bird became a trefa. So what are you telling me? According to this version, it's not able to go through that entire cycle. Amalei, and Amemar answers him, Hasam b'deshichla kama. Yes, but that Mishnah is talking about the eggs from the first batch. Where we're saying, again, which was before, they started developing before it became treif, right? And the point is also, Rashi explains, because they're still in the process of developing, they're still attached to the mother by various ducts and cords and whatnot. Gidin is the expression Rashi uses. So therefore, they really are considered like part of its body. If the mother becomes treif, automatically they become treif as well. But again, we're talking about over here either where it was definitely a treif, or we're talking about where it's Suffolk treif, and we're concerned about this first batch because we have to hold on to them. Okay, again, the question is in Cain Godla, Gomra Miboyle, similar to the question that we said, similar to what we said at the top of the Amud. The question is, in that case, the word Godla doesn't seem to fit. Godla implies that it went through its entire growth cycle from the original development of the egg until it's actually laid. Whereas if we're saying that a trefa is not able to give birth, then the expression should be Gomra, that it was completed in its development after the mother became a trefa. The answer is okay, Tani Gomra. Fine, you can modify the wording of the Mishnah. It doesn't mean Godla, that it grew its entire growth. In other words, we can understand the word Godla, not in the sense of growing from beginning to end, but rather growing as in growing up from a smaller from an earlier stage of development. So it continued to develop after the mother became a tree. Okay. Again, Elaha Ditchnan. Okay, but then what are we going to do with the following Mishnah? Again, which we brought in the Gemara before, in the first version. The Mishnah says, or Ditanya really, it's a Braisa, Vlad Trefa, a baby of a mother animal that became Trefa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Lo Yikrav L'Gabi Mizbeach. Rabbi Eliezer says you cannot bring the baby animal as a korban. Rabbi Yishua Omer Yikrav. Rabbi Yishua says you could bring it. Now, B'mai Komifudi, now in the first version, we were understanding that the machlokas was that the case was that the mother became treif and then became pregnant. In other words, the premise that we used in the first version was everybody agrees that Everybody agrees over Yerach Imayhu that the baby is considered a part of the mother. Therefore, if she was pregnant when she became a Terefa, no question the baby would be Aser. The question is rather when she became a Terefa and then became pregnant. Again, in the first version, where it's possible for that to happen. So Rabbi Eliezer had held Zebazet Gerdim as Aser, Rabbi Yeshua held as Mutter. In this second version, since according to the second version, a Terefa animal was not able to become pregnant and carry to full term and then give birth to live young, then we have to be talking about, so therefore we have to be talking about that the case is Ibrol of a Seif Nitrifa. The Machlokas must be talking about a case where the mother was pregnant and then during the pregnancy became a Terefa. So why would we be saying, why would Rabbi Eliezer be saying it's Aser and Rabbi Yeshua not? Apparently it's a different premise of their Machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer Savar Uber Yerech Imahu. Rabbi Eliezer would hold that the baby is considered a part of the mother. Therefore, when she became Treif during the pregnancy, automatically the baby became Treif with her. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua would hold that not. The baby is considered a separate entity. Again, fine, we could understand the machlokas that way, but the problem is the same as before. Ihachi, if you're going to understand their machlokas that way on the basis of what our Maimar is saying, Ademifligi Lagavoya, instead of arguing about what happens if about whether you can bring the baby as a korban to Hashem, Lichligulahediyot, why don't they instead argue about the more straightforward case? Are you allowed to eat it? If we're saying Rabbi Eliezer would say the mother became Terefa and therefore the baby she was carrying also became Terefa, because Uber Yerachimai, it means the baby itself is also Tei. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, it would be Mutter. Why present the Machloikas as referring to Karbonis? And the answer is, as before, Lohidiyacha Koychej Rabbi Yeshua. You could answer that the reason why the Braisa presents the Machloikas that way is to tell us how far Rabbi Yeshua goes in being Matir, that not only you're allowed to eat it, but you're even allowed to use it as a Karbon. We wouldn't say, for example, that because it came from a Terefa, therefore it's disgusting and it's repulsive to use as a korban, whatever. We wouldn't say that.
So there's no contradiction.
Right. So the question is still v'lifligubahediot. So why don't they intend v'lifligubahediot lo'diach ha'koched Rabbi Eliezer? Again, as in the first version, why don't we instead present their machloikas as whether a hediot, whether a regular person can eat it, whether it's kosher or treif, and that would tell us how far Rabbi Eliezer goes, that not only he asks it as a korban, but he even says it's treif to eat. And the answer is, as before, koyach da'ateira odiflay. We would rather highlight how far the one who's matir, namely Rabbi Yeshua, is going in being matir. Because as Rashi says, there's no chokhmah in being in asering, because that could be you're doing it because you're not sure. But if you go, if you're matir, then it shows you're definitely certain about your position. Right. Okay. And therefore, when we say that they, meaning Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, or meaning as Tosfos says, the Shammai and the Hillel, agree that eggs of a Terefa are Aser, that would be, like we said before, we're talking about the first batch of eggs that the mother was carrying when she became a Terefa.
But initially
in other words, they started out developing the heter, but they started out developing the heter, but later on, when they were laid, the mother was already a Terefa, and why would that be my time of Gufahi? Because the eggs are more like the body of the mother. Because again, like Rashi says, they're attached to the mother with various cords. And
if you say they were Terefa to begin with, then how did they become...
So again, according to the second version, a Terefa bird is not able to start developing eggs in her body and eventually be able to lay them. It won't happen because a Terefa is too weak to be able to do that. So therefore, according to the second version, we can't say that we're talking about eggs that started developing after she was a Terefa, and the question is, Zeva Zegodim or not, because such a thing is impossible. Therefore, of necessity, we have to be talking about the case where they were Shech Lakama, the first batch that developed while she became a Terefa, and afterwards she laid them. And the question, therefore, is, do we say that they're considered part of the mother or not? And we're saying, even Rabbi Yeshua, who says that with animals, the baby animal is not considered part of the mother, with eggs, he will say they are more considered part of the mother.
So that implies that we have not all the trephas are not your latest. If you're trephas from the beginning, you're not your latest, but if your trephas from...
Yeledes, again, first of all, you have Rishonim who learn that it means being able to become pregnant in the first place.
Right.
But they all have to explain the Gemara the same way, but whatever. The halacha is actually according to the Rishonim that say we're talking about the full development cycle.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so therefore, that's what we're saying. In other words, sure, a hen that's a trefa could start developing eggs, but she'll never be able to lay them. Here we're talking about eggs that were laid. And the question is after the usual 21-day growth period, and the question is whether they're kosher or not. So we can't be talking about they started developing after it's a trefa. The only possible way for that to happen would be if it was a Suffolk trefa, and the very fact that it ended up laying those that new clutch of eggs shows that it's not a trefa, shows that the Suffolk turns out to have been resolved in favor.
To say that it was not a Suffolk, you have to say that it was trefa from the beginning, basically.
In order to have that the eggs are definitely osir, you have to have, we have to be talking about the eggs that it was carrying at the time, which later on it laid. Sometime within 21 days after the attack.
Right. The trefus would be fully the eggs.
Yeah. So this is the issue I mentioned at the end yesterday that Tosfos brings up the point. The fact is the halacha is uber yarech imayhu, that the baby is considered an extension of the mother. So how are we saying over here that Rabbi Eliezer holds that, but Rabbi Yeshua holds that not, when the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua against Rabbi Eliezer? Okay, Tosfos talks about that. Maybe there's a difference between nizikin. Maybe there's a difference actually. Tosfos said between trefus and other things. After all, the baby has a life force of its own. Yes, as long as it's in the mother, it's an extension of the mother. But eventually, it's born and it has an independent existence
so
and an independent life.
So
the status changes after it's born, basically. Yeah. As opposed to with eggs, they're not like that because eggs don't have really a life force of their own. So those are the two ways of explaining Amemar's statement. One is that he's talking about Vadai Trefa, and we're talking about the first batch, which were also because they became Trefa along with the mother, versus the second batch, which are Mutter because Zevezegorim, and they're only also if there's no Zevezegorim, if they're unfertilized eggs. In the second version, there's no difference. It's fertilized and unfertilized because they're not dealing with Zevezegorim anymore. We're dealing with, was the bird a Suffolk Trefa or not? If it was a Suffolk trefa, then the first batch we have to hold on to, see what happens. If there's a second batch, then we know the first batch is good. And if it was Vadai trefa, then whatever eggs it was carrying at the time are also period. It doesn't matter fertilized or unfertilized.
Why do you insist on working with Amemar's statement? Why do we have
to? Because Amemar made a statement, and we want to be able to accept.
We're
not going to say that unless we have to. So we have to have some way of explaining it according to both possibilities. So therefore, the Hilchasa. Now, what's the bottom line halacha in these things? Well, Bezacha kol shnei mas b'chodesh, that bottom line halacha is that, the more general thing, not specifically about eggs, in general, about trefas. When you have a male animal that is a Suffolk trefa, if it lives for 12 months, then we know it's good. You don't have to check it anymore, Rashi says, even. B'nekeva kol she'eni yeledes, and when it comes to a female animal, you could also keep it for 12 months, but you don't have to. You have a quicker way of checking because you can see whether it's able to give birth. And if it's able to, the halacha, in other words, is not like Rav Acha bar Yaakov, trefa yeledes mashbakas. The halacha is like the second version we said, Ravina's version of Amemar's statement and the analysis of it, that a trefa is not able to go through the entire pregnancy and birth cycle.
That's absolute.
Right. And therefore, once you have a Suffolk trefa, so again, for a Vadai trefa, none of this helps. Because after all, you do have the possibilities, as we discussed yesterday, that Ashba says you might be mistaken, you might have mistaken it for another animal or something, you might have, like the Marshal says, that you have one in a tiny minority of animals that do manage to, but if you have a Suffolk trefa, then already these things are good enough to consider that takes care of the problem and the Suffolk has been resolved. With that said, though, it says in Shulchan Aruch that in general you shouldn't do that because you have the problem of takala. You have the problem that you may forget that this thing is a Suffolk trefa, and then meanwhile you're going to end up shechting to let it for 12 months because in between you're liable to forget and end up shechting it.
You discard the male.
So practically speaking, what it would mean is if we say that you shouldn't keep it around, it would mean you shecht it. Let's say you shecht it and sell the meat to a goy or something, and that way for the females it depends. Chickens, for example, since it only takes a couple of weeks, then it might right. So, but on the other hand, with larger animals, where you have to wait months until they become pregnant and give birth, then maybe not. Okay, since we mentioned this concept that a trefa animal can't live more than 12 months, so the Gemara digresses a second to talk about something else that can't live more than 12 months. Amar Rav Huna, kol beria she'en bo esem, any creature that does not have bones, so like insects, for example, enes miskayim yud beis chodesh, will not stay in existence for 12 months. Now, why is that important to know? Amar Papa Shmami Namidir Rav Huna, we can deduce from what Rav Huna is saying the following din. Now we have a din like this. Hada Amar Shmuel. Shmuel tells us the din. Now later, towards the end of our parak, the last blot or two of our parak, and in another week and a half, Bez Hashem, we're going to be dealing with the dinim of insects in food. When they're also when they're mutter. So one of them is that Shmuel says kishos sheitliya beibah. Kishos is a watermelon or pumpkin or some other or cucumber or some other such vegetable, whatever. If it was infested by worms while it's still attached to the ground, asura, then those worms are also to eat. The reason is, now again, we're going to discuss in more detail.
Hold on.
Well, I mean, here the worms don't develop from the food itself. We'll talk about the relevance of the 12-month business. But wait, the point is like this. The Torah tells us that you're not allowed to eat hasheretz hasheretz al ha'aretz. You're not allowed to eat the insects or the creatures that swarm on the ground. Now, when this fruit is attached to the tree or to the plant or whatever, and there are insects in it, there are worms in it, those are considered to have swarmed on the ground. Because the fruit or the vegetable is still attached to the ground. Therefore, those worms are also. As opposed to...
When it's mechuber, right.
You actually have a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos, which we'll discuss later on in the parak. Does it have to be that they actually moved around in the fruit or vegetable while it was attacked, or is it enough that they're just there? Whatever, that's not negeia right now. That's a side issue. But anyway, the point is, if, on the other hand, you have fruits or vegetables become infested with worms after they were picked, then those worms are not in and of themselves usur unless they actually crawl out of the fruit. So therefore, for example, when you have fruits that the whole issue we have nowadays with fruits and vegetables that have worms or bugs in them and you have to check them very carefully, the issue is not so much bugs that may have developed in them after they were picked. The issue is bugs that may have developed in them while they were still attached to the ground. If they develop in them after they were picked, as long as they stay in their place inside the fruit, in principle, they're actually mutter. Well, again, we'll deal with that later on in more detail at the end of the panel.
It's significant that they're able to crawl out of the fruit, right?
If they actually crawl out of the fruit, then they're ulcer. That's still considered a shirat alaris. That's still considered that they swarmed on the ground. But if they stay within the fruit and they only developed in it after it was picked, then in principle, they're mutter. So therefore, what we're saying is like this. So Shmuel had told us that if you have a pumpkin or whatever kind of vegetable develops worms while it's attached to the ground, those worms are off. But based on what Rav Huna is telling us, that invertebrates, creatures that don't have bones, can't live more than 12 months, which includes these worms, therefore, hani tamni jakada, therefore, says Rav Papa, dates that are kept in a jar, where you find afterwards that they're infested with worms, and you don't know, did those worms develop in them before they were picked or after they were picked? Levosa treso yache shata sharyam. Once 12 months have passed since those dates were picked and placed in the jar, then they will be mutter, because any worms that would have been in them when they were picked are long since dead, because they can't live more than 12 months. That's what we're saying.
Even while in the fruit?
Is that the point? Even if they were in the fruit when it was picked, but now that 12 months have passed since it was picked, any of the worms that were in it when it was picked are dead. And in fact, we're showing him say, we don't just mean they're dead, because so what? You can't eat dead worms either. The point is, the expression that in Miskaimin, the expression we had in the Gemara is that they don't last. In Miskaimin, Yud Bishchodesh, Miskaimin means that there's not really any identifiable residue of them left. They decay so completely that all that's left is dust, which is not identifiable anymore as having originally been a worm. Therefore, we're saying they would be mutter. There are details in that, because again, you do have the issue. It mentions in Shulchan Aruch, you do have the issue, this would only apply if you know for a fact they didn't go out of the fruit. But if you have, for example, if the fruits have holes in them, then you have a problem, because then they may well have crawled out through those holes and then they became ulcer even when they go back into the fruit. If they develop in the fruit after it was picked, again, let's say, in other words, you had mother worms came over there and laid their eggs in it, and the eggs are not visible with the naked eye, so therefore the halacha doesn't concern itself with them. Later on, you find worms in them. If you know that those worms didn't exit the fruit, then they would be mutter.
Right.
Yeah, that's the point with it.
Right.
Okay. Okay, Omar Rav. So in this connection, Rav says, less boka bar yoma, the less didva bashata. You never find a boka, which Rashi says is some kind of insect. Rashi translates it with a word that means a mosquito. You never find a boka that's a day old. In other words, they always live less than a day.
Only a mosquito?
No, I mean Rashi translates it as a mosquito, although the mosquitoes we know nowadays live a few weeks. So maybe And besides that, the Gemara is gonna say we're talking about this as a species where both the males and the females bite. So the pastures it says so maybe it's not the mosquitoes that we're familiar with. Well, we're not talking, no, forget about crawling. Now we're done with the matter of crawling. We're still talking about invertebrates. Flies and insects, all kinds of flies and insects and mosquitoes are still invertebrates. They don't have bones. So they still, the same rule applies that they don't live more than 12 months. But Rav says, in the case of this boka, whatever kind of insect this is, a mosquito or whatever, not only it doesn't live for a year, it doesn't even live for a day. The less didva bashata, and you never find a regular fly that's a year old because they always die in less than a year. Amaleta popola bias. Didva is a fly. It's the equivalent of zvub in Hebrew. Amaleta popola bias. So the papa asked the bias, what about the amri inchi? But you have a popular expression, and these popular expressions have a certain amount of truth to them. Shev shni, for 7 years, imra baksa mi baka. The female baka, baksa is a female baka. The female baka was angry with and alienated from and then rebelling against the baka, the male baka. Why? De omrele, because she said, well, let's first learn the expression, then we'll talk about the deeper meanings of it. De omrele, because this is a popular expression, but these popular expressions that I brought in the Gemara have deeper meanings as well. What happened? What does the baksa have against the baka? De omrele, she says to him, chazisei labai, this is a popular expression, chazisei labai mechoza, I saw a person from mechoza, and in mechoza, they had a very easy lifestyle, so therefore, like they're a good target for mosquitoes and other blood-sucking insects. This guy bathed in water, the solik, then he came out of the water, the ichrich, the sedinian, he wrapped himself up in a towel, but you, the male baka, landed on him, and you sucked some of his blood, and you didn't tell me. So therefore, the female was angry at the male, look at this, you had a whole buffet over there, and you didn't even tell me about it, so I could come also. Anyway, the point is that the expression is that she's angry at him for 7 years. So you see, they live a long time. A couple of deeper meanings of this expression. Marsha says we're talking about people who live to harm other people we're talking about the kind of person who lives to harm and cause trouble for other people, and therefore they're upset when there was a chance to be able to hurt or whatever somebody else, and then you didn't come and tell them. You have other explanations. You have other explanations as well, including one of them is it's also a marshal about why would the baka not? Why would the male not tell the female? Probably because he wants to keep it all for himself. What? Seriously, in a ben mechuzah, in this fat, easygoing guy, there's not going to be enough blood for somebody else as well. So in other words, it's a marshal on a selfish person who is unreasonably selfish. Anyway. So the point is, this expression shows that they live for 7 years. Amarle, so Abaya answers him, Belitai Meich. Okay, so new, you're according to your own Svara that you're asking the question, what about there's another popular expression about bugs? Hoda Amri Inshi, there's another popular expression that people say, Shitin Moni Parzala, 60 mona of iron, Tolule the Baka Bakurnase, are hanging off the Baka's hammer, meaning his beak. Parzala is iron. Shitin money parzala, 60 money, meaning a heavy weight of iron. Tolule the Baka are hanging from the Baka Bakurnase on his hammer, meaning on his proboscis or whatever, what they use to sting and suck blood with. In other words, the point is that people are saying the expression means, in other words, it's figurative, meaning, in other words, that the bite of this baka is very severe, very dangerous. Yeah. The point is, again, you could ask, what kind of 60 mana? Me ikka. How could you have 60 mana attached to 60 mana? It's a heavy weight. You go for kamahavi. How much does a baka itself weigh? Next to nothing.
So you could think by...
So the answer is, ella b'monei didhu. Well, sort of. So the answer is, what is the popular expression has validity, but it's not talking about all human-sized monads. It's talking about scaled down to the size of a buck or of a mosquito. We're talking about what would be the equivalent of, maybe, but okay, it's still not going to have 60. You're still not going to have 60 mono pressure.
Per tenth of a millimeter.
No, okay, so in a certain sense, you could say that's what the Gemara means. You know, but scaled down to the size of the mosquito, then you have 60. You have 60 mono over there. Hachanami, Bishani Didhu, the same thing, the popular expression about the 7 years could be talking about seven mosquito years.
Right.
In other words, when you think in terms of a mosquito's life, what we're saying, we're saying in the Gemara over here, we're saying they lived for only a day, so therefore a few it's not the mosquitoes that we're familiar with, but whatever. The point is, scale down to the fact that they live only for a day, then 7 years would be, in other words, like a few minutes in human terms. But yeah. Okay. The second one also about the 60 mono of iron, Marsha explains that it's also besides for the literal meaning that the Gemara is attaching to it, it also has a figurative meaning. It's talking about the danger of a Baal Lashon Hara. A Baal Lashon Hara is like a mosquito. He uses his mouth to bite and cause damage and whatever, and therefore it's warning about the danger of it, what a heavy weight is attached to it, and therefore how far to stay away from it. Yeah. One more. I mean, there's also Ben Yehoyada talks about an idea when we're saying that the baka lives for only a day and the didva, a fly, lives for no more than a year. He says that's referring to different kinds of, you have the Yetzirah and you have the Satan. The Yetzirah, you have a person has a different Yetzirah every day. So like the Yetzirah that a person has today is not the same one he had yesterday. So in that sense, because each day a person is faced with new different guises or whatever.
Right.
The point is, so like every day, even if a person conquered it yesterday, he still has to be on the lookout for it today. And the second one about the fly, he says it's referring to the Sutton. So like, so to speak, you don't have the same Sutton from 1 year to the next, because every year comes Yom Kippur and like he's silenced and he can't say anything. So like then he has to start all over the next year.
Right.
Okay.
You dove it on Yom Kippur. Hashem give me a good Yetzirah this year.
No. We're saying that the Hasatan, the Gemara tells us in Yoma, that the word Hasatan has a Gematria of 364, implying that only 364 days a year does he have the ability to slander the Jewish people in front of Hashem on Yom Kippur or not. Right. Okay.
We still have to trick him.
Well, that's not on Rosh Hashanah.
It's on Rosh Hashanah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Onward.
So
okay.
He still exists on Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Onward. Okay, so now returning to trains. Shnan Hossam. Now, we learn in a Mishnah in Bechoros, which we have a whole perek over there that deals with possible mumim in a bechor, where if an animal bechor has one of these mumim, then it's considered a mum, and then therefore you have it looked at by an expert, and then you can shecht it, and then the kohenim can shecht it, and they can eat it. So, one of the mumim that it mentions over there, behema balas heraglayim, if an animal has five legs, or it has an extra leg, oisha ein la'el shalosh, or it only has three legs, hareza a mum, then that's considered a mum, and that's a valid thing to shecht the b'chor for. Omer avona, loishonu el shechosu v'yeser b'yad. This that we're talking about, the case over there where it's a mum, but in other words, the animal itself is kosher, is only talking about if it has an extra or missing four leg. But not the back legs. But if it has an extra back leg or it has a missing back leg, then it would be trefa. Trefa nami havia. Then not only forget about a mum, then it's going to be trefa. You can't talk about shechting it anyway because you're not going to be able to eat it anyway. My timer. Now, why would that be? Because we have a concept called kol yeser kenotel domi. Whenever you have something extra, it's as if it was missing. So therefore, the fact that it has an extra leg, now we learned a few times already in our parish that if the animal's leg is missing, then it's trefa or sometimes even nevela. So therefore, an extra leg amounts to the same thing.
So isn't that a dislocation, the same thing?
Well, as we said, so we talked about dislocation.
Yeah,
there's two or three different explanations.
Maybe you bust some bone.
Fine. So here also, this that we're saying that an extra leg would make a shape would only be if that extra leg begins above a certain point. If it's just an extra leg on the lowest joint. If it's an extra limb sticking out, for example, from the lowest part of the leg over here, let's say from here, then you're right, it wouldn't make the animal a trace, because even if that whole part was cut off, it wouldn't be trace.
Right.
Yeah. But if it starts higher up. So what's the reason, what's the logic behind this kol yeser kenotel domi business? We have a few explanations. Rashi says what it is that exactly that. When you have something extra, it's as if it's the equivalent of the original one being missing. So therefore, in other words, you have, in effect, this animal has only three legs. Even though it looks like it has five, as far as halacha is concerned, it has only three, and it's missing a leg. And we've learned before that it's trefa.
Right.
You have a couple of other explanations that Rishonim bring. The Ramban brings the idea. It's not so much that. It's more that Ramban says what it is you would consider the extra limb as though it, together with the thing that it was attached to, is removed. So if you have an extra leg, that if you have an extra leg over here, for example, here, let's see. If you have an extra leg, for example, that starts off over here near the hip, then the Ramban learns basically what it is it's as if that entire extra leg was missing, plus the area of the other one that it's next to, that it's attached to. And we've learned before that if the top part of the thigh bone is dislocated, then it's straight. So therefore, that's the equivalent. The Rashba gives a slight variation on it. It's not so much that the part that's attached to is missing, but it's still as if the limb as a whole is missing, and therefore, like you have a hole over there.
If you have half an extra leg,
so it depends. So the point is actually where it's attached. The point is not so much how far down it extends. Although it does say in Shulchan Aruch, it has to be something that looks like a leg. If it's just something that looks like an extra lump of flesh or something, then that's nothing. One thing that comes up as far as a nafkamina between these opinions of the Rishonim would be, let's say, for example, one example is, let's say the animal has an extra spleen. Now, we've learned before, if the animal is missing the spleen, it's kosher. So if you go like Rashi's explanation over here, that it's just because the extra one is considered as though both of them are missing, so what? And if the spleen as a whole is missing, the animal is kosher anyway. No, we didn't talk about the spleen over here, but the Gemara didn't say anything about the spleen over here.
In principle.
It's in principle. Fine. Kol yester kenotel zomi. So Rashi would say, therefore, it doesn't apply to organs, that if they're not all, it's kosher anyway, so it's just a spleen. On the other hand, it wouldn't apply. On the other hand, based on the Ramban's and then the Rashba's explanation, it might be, if the extra spleen is attached to the thick end where of the normal spleen. Now, we've learned before that if the thick end of the normal spleen has a hole in it, then it was cut away or whatever, then the animal is straight. So then you'd have a problem, because then it's considered as though the entire extra spleen plus that extra area of the regular one is missing, and therefore it would be straight. Yeah. So that's one of the next minutes they talk about. Okay. So here's a case. Hahi chevisa dehavala tautis sanya div. There was a case of an animal
with kidneys,
because
you can take them out.
The pashtus, I mean, we've learned before that even if the kidneys are missing, it's mutter. So the pashtus, if you have an extra kidney, it wouldn't be an issue. Yeah, the pashtus, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara tells a case. There was a case of an animal that had two sanya divi. Now, we've learned before, about the sanya divi. We've talked about a couple of possibilities what it is. We talked about one possibility is that it is, Rashi had given a couple of definitions over there. One of them is that it was the cecum, which is a pouch-like thing that sticks out from the intestine.
Right.
Another possibility Rashi had mentioned, and we learned in the Gemara over there, is that maybe it's some part of the rumen, like the sacs at the end of it or whatever. So in this case, you had an animal that had a double one. Now, we've learned before that the sanya
either a
double cecum or a double part of that rumen, right? Now, we've learned before that that part, the sanya divi, is one of those areas where if it has a hole, then the animal is straight. So therefore, I threw a Ravina, so they brought the animal to Ravina, but Tarsa, me to Rav Huna, and he declared it safe on the basis of Rav Huna's din, because if it has an extra sanya divi, it's as if it doesn't have any at all, or as if the existing one has a hole in it, or whatever. However, the Gemara says, the ish shachan mahadadi, however, if these two sanya divis pour one into another, in other words, if they're not completely separate, like this, the case where it was trace is where the two sanya divis, let's say we're talking about the cecum, so here's a picture, are completely separate from each other. They both branch off the intestine, and that's that. But if you have, to begin with, they start off together, and only afterwards you have one thing branching off the intestine as one sanya divi, and then it divides into two, meaning therefore you can pour the contents of one into another, then it would be kosher. That's not considered an extra sanya divi. Then it's just considered effectively you have actually over here. So you can see actually it's not so much they start together. It's actually what it is they have further down they join back together.
So if you have two legs that connect with each other, then
So say, start, maybe. I mean, I don't know if anything would happen, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right. Another example, Hahi Guvsa Dahavanafki Mi Beikasi Lohogliva. They once found an animal that had a guvsa, which means a tube of flesh that ran between the Beikasi, the Beis HaKosis, the second stomach, and the Hohlila, which is the Hemsis, the third stomach. So here's a picture of it over here.
Right.
Now, there is normally, now what it is normally there is a connection between the two of them, but not in the form of a tube. And there is, by the way,
what is it,
well, usually it would just be like a hole, a sphincter or something. So like this, to find a
small tube.
Okay, but this one just looks different than normal. There is also, in Colon Illuminated, he points out that what you actually have, you find in baby animals, there is a tube, which might be the same one that the Gemara is describing over here, which actually what it does is when a nursing, so like this you have, why does a kosher animal have four stomachs? So we've talked about the whole concept that because the food has to be regurgitated, which we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah, so therefore it needs to go into the first stomach to decay for a while, and then the second stomach to be formed into cud, and so on and so forth. But when it comes to a baby animal, though, a baby animal doesn't need all of that because the milk that it's nursing from its mother doesn't need to spend time in the womb and doesn't need to be formed into cud, etc. So there is this natural passageway, you can see it over here, that goes from the rumen directly to the rumen directly to the third stomach, the Hemsis, and the idea of it is it's open when the animal is a baby.
Mm-hmm.
The milk goes directly through there, and then that way it's able to go more or less directly to the fourth stomach and get digested like it should. Later on, when the animal is
decayed by the mother.
Well, because milk doesn't need decaying, but whatever. Later on, when the animal matures, the milk doesn't need to be in the rumen, because like this, what the grass needs to stay in the rumen. It needs to be acted on by bacteria, and later on it'll be formed into cud, and later on water. The mother nurses the baby, and the baby drinks the milk, and it goes down its esophagus and goes
right.
to its stomach.
Right.
So how does it get directly to its fourth stomach? So therefore, you have this groove that exists in baby animals that it passes through there directly to the fourth stomach. That way, the milk or close to the fourth stomach, whatever, from the first stomach. Which is where the esophagus goes into the first stomach, and then it goes directly from there to the bypassing the whole thing and goes to the third/fourth stomach, so it can get digested. So he thinks that's maybe the guvsa that the Gemara is talking about over here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the point is, so they found this guvsa, they found this tube of flesh between the stomachs, which didn't seem to be normal. Sovereign of Ashi in the Tufa, said of Ashi thought to declare the animal trace because you have something extra over there. Tells Rav Ashi, no, you don't. It's not treif. Kol hani chayve biryasa hachi islohu. All the biryasa animals have this. Biryasa we learned earlier in the parak. We had a similar expression. It means either healthy animals or it means wild animals. Either way, the point is, it's a normal thing. So maybe what it is if we say, like he's saying over here in Colon Illuminated, that it's this groove that exists normally in a baby animal, normally in an adult animal it closes up. Maybe Rav Huna Mar is telling him, but you should know there are some species of animals or some particularly healthy species, specimens or whatever, where it stays open longer. Rav Ashi may have known that it exists in a baby. He may not have realized that it exists in an adult animal. It wouldn't be normal for it to persist in an adult animal. But okay. Another case, Hahu Guvsa Dahavra Ma'abri Mebekasi Lakarsa. Then there was another case with a similar tube that went between, Guvsa again means a tube of flesh.
Right.
That went between the Beis HaKosis and the Keres, between the second stomach and the first. So again, obviously, normally there's a connection between them, but to have a tube like that particularly is not a normal thing. It's not a normal part of the anatomy. Again, Mar Rav Ashi, who was the son of Rav Ashi, thought to declare it kosher. If in the previous case his father, Rav Ashi, was told it's normal that there can be a tube from here to here, that some animals have that as a normal part of their anatomy, Rashi, some Abba Rav Ashi figure. The same thing with this one.
But it's not the same time.
The answer is, there's sort of said, Omelet of Oshia, sort of Oshia says some Abba Rav Ashi. What do you think? Do you think to weave everything into one web? You can't generalize from one thing to another. Hecha de itmar, where it was said that it's kosher, that's a normal thing, then it's kosher.
Which is between the
hemsis and the beis hakosis, between the second and third stomachs. Hecha de lo itmar, where it's not said, then it's not said. In other words, it's not normal that even if we assume that it is that same tube from when the animal is a baby, it's not normal for that part of it to persist into adulthood.
And the same function.
Right, because the grass is not supposed to be bypassing
right.
The whole thing. Right, so therefore, it would be true. Okay. Now, going back to the matter of yes, there can nuzzle, that if you have something doubled, then it's considered as if it's missing. Heyed Nosen Bar Shila, Rav Tabachaya de Tzipori, Nosen Bar Shila, who was the head butcher, the head shochet of the city of Tzipori, gave Edus, Lifnei Rebbe, in front of Rebbe, Al Shnei Bnei Me'ayim Ayotzim Min HaBehema Ke'echad, that if you have two intestines that come out of in an animal, that come out together. So here you have a picture. So you have the four stomachs over here. And then instead of having one set of intestines, as you usually should, you have two. You have one here and then you have an extra one over here. So he testified in front of Rebbe, she trefa, that such a thing would be trefa. On the other hand, ukinegdan ba'oif ksheira. On the other hand, if a parallel thing happens with a bird, then it will be kosher. Now, why should that be? Rashi says two reasons. Number one, because they knew sometimes it happens with birds. It's a normal enough thing to happen with birds that you can't consider it trefa. Rashi says another reason is because even if you say that it's not...
Connect them
means the parallel thing. If you were to have two sets of intestines in a bird, then it would be kosher. So Rashi gives two reasons. One is because you do have a significant minority of birds that have that, so it can't really be declared trace, unlike in an animal where it would be a complete freak.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason Rashi says is because anyway, in a bird, you have effectively two sets of intestines. You have the part between the zephek, the crop, and the gizzard, which it's similar enough, especially the proventriculum over here. It has digestive enzymes or whatever, and you have the one that comes out the other end. So they're similar enough in form and in function that they can be thought of as a double intestine. So therefore, if you have a double intestine in the back, then no big deal. That's Rashi's second explanation. And then you have a third explanation, which the Ravan, one of the Rishonim, gives, that we're not talking about over here in general. We're not talking about over here about two sets of intestines in general. That, yeah, not necessarily is that going to be kosher. What we're talking about, we said that in an animal, it's not normal for there to be two cecum. There should usually only be one. But in birds, it's very common that you have two of them. Therefore, you can't declare it trait. Therefore, it's normal, and you can't declare it trait on that basis. Right. Okay, Bamed Ronam Amurim. Now, when is this talking about that if an animal has two sets of intestines, it's Jaif? Sheyotin b'shnei makomos, if they come out from the stomach in two places. Avo yotin b'mokom echa b'kolin ad ke'etzba, but if they come out in one place, right next to each other, and they go down to an etzba, which we'll say in a second what that means, kshera, then it would be kosher. What does it mean, kolin ad ke'etzba? So Rashi explains, there's a few explanations of Rishonim. Rashi explains it means like this. It means that at some point, it starts out as one, like it should, then at some point it divides into two, and then within an etzba's length, it goes back into one. That would be kosher. It may not be normal, but it's not so abnormal as to be trace. The case we're talking about where it would be trace is where they stay separated for longer than that. You have a couple of other explanations of Rishonim, including one which is similar to the picture over here, that what we mean is as long as there's an etzba length of them towards the end before they exit the body that comes back together, then it's okay. You have a couple of opinions brought about it in Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Shligi bar Rabami v'Rav Asi. So in fact, Rav Ami and Rav Asi argue about the meaning of the svakolin ad ke'etzba. Chad amahu dehadri v'ari. One says that it would be kosher only if they eventually do get back, only if they do eventually go back together. That's one opinion. Chad amah afag abdalei hadri v'ari. The other one says no. As long as they both came out of about the same area in the stomach, even if they end up remaining separate for their entire length, then it would still be kosher as long as they were together at the beginning. So, according to the opinion that says as long as they join back together eventually, then it's kosher, hayin d'kafani ad kaspa. Then that explains what we meant when we said ad kaspa, as long as you have, like Rashi says, that they rejoin within an espa's length, or according to the other explanations, that it means that eventually they join for at least an espa's length, then good. But according to the opinion that says it would be kosher as long as they started at the beginning, even if they never rejoined together, even if they remained separate for the entire rest of the length, my ad ke'espa, so what would the ad ke'espa mean? The answer is ad ke'espa milamata. He would say, okay, but what it would have to be is they do have to eventually join together for at least an espa right before the rectum. So that way, at least you have, but the race still, that would still, according to that opinion, it would still make it kosher, right?
So the first not, but it's
so the first. So the first opinion would say that, so again, according to Rashi, the difference is that the first opinion would say that they have to rejoin within an espa, otherwise they're today. And the second opinion would say as long as they rejoin for an espa before the rectum, then they're okay. According to the other opinions of the Goyim, then it would be that it would give, it's not so much, and again, it had to be that they came out of the stomach right next
where
to each other.
Split?
According to
small intestine,
we're talking about the small intestine, yeah.
They
split. We said they split so there's two possibilities. We said when they came out of two different parts of the stomach, or we said when they came out of one part of the stomach. Well, so yeah, you could have one possibility is where they split further on. You could have where they split closer to the stomach or whatever. But yeah, so you have. You have other explanations as well. You have other explanations as well when it's kosher and when not, including some that you can see over here. You also have in these pictures over here, you can see that sometimes you have like little pouches. Sometimes you have little pouches, and in medical use they call them diverticula that come out of the intestine. So then one way of looking at it is we're talking about those. Do they come out next to each other and they eventually rejoin the main thing like that, or do they stay separate and then there would be a problem? Okay. So those are a variety of different opinions on the subject. You do, by the way, often, as he shows over here in a picture, you often find in birds, you find a diverticulum like that. It's common enough. The problem is that a lot of times it becomes infected, and therefore that's one of the things they have to check for nowadays, because there's a mere tamasui. There's a significant minority that have that problem, and therefore they have to check for them in the chicken processing plants. Yeah. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omerim Nitzla HaNoitza Psula, Rabbi Yehuda had said that if the down of a bird is gone, then the bird is traced, because he said it's not going to be able to keep itself warm. So Amr Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Yechanan points out, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel Amru Davar Echad. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel are saying two different dinim that are based on the same premise. And by the way, if that's the case, it would mean the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, because in general, when the Gemara does that, that's plony and plony, omru davar echad, it's called a shita, and usually the rule is ein halacha kashita. The halacha is not like such a, is not like such a... So wait. So Rabbi Yochanan is telling us they're saying the same thing. The Gemara is going to question that premise. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda haldam moron. Rabbi Yehuda, we said in the Mishnah, he says that if the down of the bird is missing, it's true. Rabbi Shmuel, where do we see Rabbi Shmuel expressing such a... So now, what's the point? Why would Rabbi Yehuda be saying that it's treif? We would assume because we talked about with an animal that you have a treifa, we said we actually had a machlok, a sort of meir on the chachamim, but then we said Rabbi Meir changed his mind, that if an animal's skin has been stripped off, then it's treif, unless you have some of it in certain key areas still there, because then it'll regenerate. The premise is that we're assuming Rabbi Yehuda, when he's talking about the down, that it would be the same kind of idea. Why is it today? Because it's similar to the skin being removed on an animal. So in other words, we see that Rabbi Yehuda seems to be considering the down as sort of like the skin. Rabbi Shmuel, where do we see Rabbi Shmuel expressing an opinion on that? It's none. We learn in a Mishnah. Actually, Tosis points out part of this is in a Mishnah and more of it is in a Braisa, so maybe it should be the Tanya. Anyway, Rabbi Shmuel Omer HaNoitza Mitzarefes. Rabbi Shmuel says that the down combines with the flesh. Now, combines in what sense? Rashi says we're talking about as far as the din of pigul. That we've talked about in Zvachim and in Menachos, we've learned a couple of times, sporadically in Omer Sechta as well, that if a person does one of the basic avoidus of a korban, having in mind that he's going to eat a kezias of that korban or burn a kezias of that korban outside of beyond the time that it's supposed to be done, the next day or 2 days later or whatever it is, then it's pigul. Anybody who eats from it is chayav karis. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying, says Rashi, that the down counts towards the kezias together with the flesh. In other words, if he has in mind, well, let's say, so he's doing melika on a chatas ha'oy, where the whole chatas is eaten, none of it is burned on the mizbeach. If the kohen has in mind that he plans to eat
a
kezias,
right,
that's the point. So Rabbi Shmuel would be saying, therefore, that if he did the melika,
close the door, please.
If he did the melika, having in mind that he's going to eat a kezias, even if that kezias is a combination of some of the flesh and some of the skin and some of the down, then Rabbi Shmuel is saying he would be high. It would be considered pigul. Tosfos says it's not talking about pigul. Tosfos says it's talking about an issue of tumah v'tahara. We're going to learn later on in our Masechta in more detail, in the ninth perek. We're going to talk about the whole concept. We're going to have a lot of discussion about tumah v'tahara. We have a couple of cases where things that are not part of the food itself are considered part of it as far as hilchos tumah v'tahara. You have something called a yad, something which like is used as a handle to be able to handle the food, and like a stem, for example. And then you have something called a shomer, which is used to protect the food in storage. For example, skin on meat is one example of that. Skin on meat. If you haven't yet taken off the skin, if you haven't yet separated the skin and the flesh, you might keep them together in order that way it'll preserve the flesh a little longer. Other examples would be peels of certain fruits and vegetables, whatever, are called the shomer. And we're going to have all kinds of details over there about when they combine towards the kezias and not. So Tosfos says that we're saying over here that Rabbi Shmuel is saying that the down combines together for a kabeza to count towards tumas oichlin because it's considered a shomer. Because again, we're considering that it protects the flesh from decaying or drying out or whatever that fats when you keep it attached.
The down is above the skin, right?
Yes, but it's right above the skin, yeah.
So it protects the skin.
It protects the skin and the flesh underneath it. Okay, so we see, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel seem to be saying in the same vein that the down is considered like part of the flesh or like part of the skin. Amar Rava, but Rava says not necessarily. Dilma Lohi, maybe that's not the correct explanation. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel would not agree with each other's din. Ad kam like to Amar Rabbi Yehuda ha. So you know why Rabbi Yehuda is telling us over here that if the down is missing, the bird is trefa. Elul inyan trefa, because he's talking specifically about the dinim of trefa. Deleka midi de megin ale. Because you have nothing at this point. Once the down is gone, there's nothing to protect the bird from the cold or whatever. So therefore, it is the equivalent of the skin. Aval inin if guli, but when it comes to becoming pigul, or as Tosfos says, when it comes to tumah v'tahara, kerabanan svirale. Maybe he would agree with the rabbanan that it's not really like the skin, because, for example, maybe so according to Rashi, because you don't normally eat the down, and according to Tosfos, because the down can't really be considered a shomer, because you don't usually, when you have a shechted bird, for example, you don't usually store it away in storage with the down, because you don't want the down itself to get dirty. You want to be able to use it for other purposes. You don't want juices or whatever to leak all over it. So it's not a shomer. And v'ad kam like Amar Rabbi Shmuel hasam el inyan guli. Conversely, maybe Rabbi Shmuel is only saying regarding pigul because he says that the down is edible according to Rashi, or because it's considered a shomer according to Tosfos. Aval inyan trefa, but when it comes to trefa, you could argue aguni like magin. It's not really something that protects the animal, so that protects the bird so much. Even without it, it still has its skin. So therefore, if the down is missing, Rabbi Shmuel would say no big deal. So not necessarily are Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda agreeing on the function of the down. Each one is saying the din about it, but in a different context. Again, whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda as far as the down, so most of the poskim say no. However, I think the Urza Rua says we should respect Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, because after all, the Gemara didn't specifically, even though we had Rabbi Shimon Chalakha's experiment or whatever, but still, we didn't have a solid thing against it. So therefore, so we should try to be choshish for that opinion. And so it says in Shulchan Aruch that unless you have a hefted merubah or some other extenuating circumstance, then go ahead and don't worry about it. But otherwise, you should.
And that's the
halacha, with the exception again of what the Truma Sedeshin adds, that if the down fell off because the bird was overfed and is extra fat, then it's not a problem.
How much of it has to be missing over the body?
The patch is similar to the patch is similar to the skin, that if you have parts of it in certain key areas, then it would be kosher. Okay. All right. So now,
well, if you have, let's say, 10% of your skin, nobody can survive.
Not necessarily survive, but at least, in other words, the skin can start regenerating eventually. I don't know. Okay, the Gemara is telling us that as long as you have enough skin in the appropriate places, then it will regenerate. Again, maybe people and animals are different. Maybe the Shtanu Ativin, there's a lot of possibility. Right? Okay, fine. So now we're done talking about Trefus. So now we're going to talk about some other cases where an animal is dangerously sick, but not Trefus. We talked in the previous parak about Mesukenis, where an animal is dangerously sick. So here we're going to have some examples. Mishnah says, Achuzas Hadam, if an animal was seized by blood, meaning basically, so Rashi just says it was seized by blood, like it has an excess of blood, so it became sick. Could be high blood pressure, could be polyesis. In other words, it has too much blood, so to speak, and therefore that makes it sick. So it could be high blood pressure, it could be that it has too many red blood cells, polycythemia, they call it in medical ease, or whatever, there are a couple of possibilities. Anyway, whatever it is. V'ham ushemes, or an animal that was affected by smoke, smoke inhalation, let's say. V'ham tsunenes, or v'ham ushemes, meloshen oshem, nichnas oshem begufa. That says that smoke got into its body. V'ham tsunenes, or an animal that was chilled and became sick from that. The Rambam, by the way, in Pirush HaMishnah explains, you know, in medical science of the Rambam's time, he had the famous theory of the humors, that the body has a number of different types of fluids in it, and depending on, you know, black, yellow, whatever, yeah, you have to have them in appropriate balance in order to be healthy. So the Rambam actually explains these first three as being an excess of one or another of three of them, and he says the Mishnah didn't mention the fourth one because animals don't have very much of it. Anyway, okay, another case. Now, in all these cases, the animal is dangerously sick, but we've established before that, first of all, a trefa is not just when an animal is dangerously sick. It has to be, first of all, that there's a particular organ that is damaged or missing or punctured or what have you. Over here, it's more of a general systemic thing. And second of all, we said before in the Gemara that if it can be cured, then it's also not a trefa, and these things are things that can be cured.
So you cannot have major sickness without organ damage?
No. What we're saying is for an animal to be trefa, it has to be that some organ was damaged. If it's not, if no particular organ was damaged, but just like, for example, over here, it has high blood pressure or whatever, that wouldn't be trefa. That would be mesuken. And we learned in the previous parak that a mesukenes is mutter. You are allowed to shecht it before it dies of natural causes. We said, okay, a bal nefesh wouldn't eat from it, like Yechezko wouldn't, but it is mutter. Other examples, the sha'ochla haudufni. Suppose that an animal ate haudufni, which is a kind of plant which is poisonous to animals. I think one translation I've seen of it is the plant called oleander. Whatever it is, some kind of plant that's not poisonous to human beings, but it's poisonous to animals. The sha'achla tsoyas tanagolim, another example, if it ate chicken dung with chicken poop, yeah, which again is poisonous to animals, but not to human beings. I'm not going to try it, but yeah. In modern terms, I guess you can have E. coli and salmonella and whatever else, so maybe it is. Anyway. Or if the animal drank bad water, meaning water that was left uncovered, where we know throughout Chas that the problem is a snake might have drunk from it and injected venom into it. In all those cases, ksheira, the animal is kosher, because again, it's not treif, and there's not even an issue of sakana in there that you shouldn't eat it because of sakana's nefashis, because again, these last three things, the haudufni, the chicken waste, and the mayim aroyim, are dangerous to the animal, but they're not, if they get filtered through the animal, they're lethal to the animal maybe, but they're not lethal to a human being who eats from the meat of that animal. They don't get, as they get processed, they get broken down in the animal, therefore the person doesn't get affected by them.
Well, I mean, normally with the standard is if it's lethal to the animal, it's treif.
Again, we just said treif is only if there's a particular organ that was damaged and that it's incurable. In these cases, either there's no particular organ that's damaged or it's curable. Okay. On the other hand, ochla samamavis, if an animal ate something that's poisonous to human beings, unlike the hajufni, which is only poisonous to animals, or if it was bitten by a snake, muteres mishum trefa, it is mutter on the grounds of trefa. On the other hand, rafsurim mishum sakaras nefashos, but you're not allowed to eat from it because dangerous to life. Because the venom of the snake or the poison or whatever won't get broken down in the animal's body enough, and it will affect the person who eats it. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, So let's start on some other dinim regarding this. Shmuel says, "Hil ita chiltis." If you fed an animal chiltis, chiltis is a type of herb that has very, very pungent, very, very sharp roots or leaves or something, as the Gemara is going to say in a second. In English, it has a fancy name. It's called asafetida. But whatever, it's some kind of. Yeah. It's not like if I tell you, it's going to be any more meaningful to you. Whatever. The point is, we find in a few places in the Gemara, they did used to use it as for medicinal purposes, small quantities of it. Too much, as the Gemara is going to say soon, is dangerous to a person. But it also, if you eat it, especially on an empty stomach, it's so sharp that it can actually create holes in the stomach, and cause ulcers, holes, whatever, in the stomach. So therefore, he'll eat the chiltis. So Shmuel is saying, if you fed an animal chiltis, treifa. Then forget about the misukenes that we're talking about in our Mishnah. The animal will actually be treifa. My timer, why is that? Deminkvalahulamina. Because it'll cause the intestines or some part of the digestive system to get punctured, and in that case, it'll be treifa, as we've learned. Masiv Rav Shizvi, so Rav Shizvi says, I have a contradiction. Our Mishnah said, or rather, a Braisa that expands on our Mishnah says, Achuzas Adam, if an animal has high blood pressure, Vamushene, so it was affected by smoke, V'sha'ochla Hadufni, or it ate Hadufni, V'sha'ochla Tsoyas Tarnagolim, or it ate chicken waste, V'sha'ochas Mayimaroim, or it drank bad water that was left uncovered, or he'll eat a Tia Chiltis or Pilpulin, or if you fed Chilis actually means force-fed, but whatever. If you force-fed an animal tia, which the Gemara is going to identify soon what that is, or chiltis, which we were just talking about, or pilpulin, or peppers, black pepper, that is, because the type of hot peppers that we're familiar with are native to America. They didn't have them in those days, but we mean black pepper. Ochla samamovis, or if the animal ate poison, kshera, in all those cases, it's kosher. Hikisha, which seems to be unlike our Mishnah, yeah, that's what we're getting at. Hikisha nachash, if it was bitten by a snake, oisha noshka kelav shaita, or if it was bitten by a rabid dog, where it's also dangerous, then, muteris mishum
treifa.
Yeah, the kelav shaita is a rabid dog, yeah. Muteris mishum treifa, the animal is mutter on the grounds of treifa, vasura mishum sakonas nefashas, but it's also because of the danger to life in eating it. The point is, therefore, kasha chiltis achiltis, kasha samamobas asamamobas. So you have a contradiction. Yeah. Shmuel is telling us that if the animal is force-fed chiltis, then it's treif. The Mishnah said that the Braisa is saying it's kosher. Our Mishnah had said that if an animal eats poison, it's also from sakonas nefashos. The Braisa says it's mutter. So we have a double contradiction. So the Gemara says, samamoves asamamoves loikasha. So chiltis achiltis loikasha. There's no contradiction between the two statements on chiltis. The two statements. Shmuel had said that if an animal is fed chiltis, it's treif, and the Braisa had said it's kosher.
Right.
Because one is talking about hard kan ba'olin, kan ba'kautin. One is talking about where you fed it the leaves, and the other one where you fed it the roots. So the leaves are okay. The roots are dangerous and can puncture the intestines. Yeah. Samamavis, samamavis like Asha. And when it comes to the case of poison, it's also not a contradiction. Hadidah, hadadam. Because one is the Braisa is talking about things that are poisonous to animals, so they're not poisonous to human beings. Therefore, the animals is safe to eat. The Mishnah is talking about things that are poisonous to human beings. Okay. The question is, what do you mean samamavis to behema? I know how dufni. We already met, the Braisa mentions how dufni, which is poisonous to animals. So then it's repetitious. The answer is, okay, today gavni samamavis. Fine, but there's different kinds. You have specifically, the Braisa is telling us there's different kinds of things that are poisonous to animals. Specifically, you have hadufni, but more generally, you have other plants that are poisonous to animals and not to humans. Hadufni is, again, oleander or some such plant, whatever. The point is that it's not poisonous to human beings, but it is poisonous to animals.
So it's kosher.
So therefore, that's the point. So if an animal eats hadufni, that's what the Mishnah had said. The Mishnah and the Braisa had both said the animal is kosher, and it's safe to eat. On the other hand, if the animal ate human poison, then we're saying it would be also a sakonas nefashos. So the Braisa just said samamavis. What we're meant to understand that it means something that's dangerous, to human beings, not.
The Mishnah is speaking exclusively of
the Mishnah is talking specifically about. What's it called? The Mishnah is talking specifically about human, about things that are poisonous to humans.
Oh, and yeah. The Braisa is talking about it.
The Braisa is talking about it. Okay. my tia. Now, in the Braisa, we mention in the Braisa, we mention something called tia. So what is what is tia?
Tia.
What? No, it's not tia. Omer of Yehuda, ikra de mirirta. It means the root of the mirirta plant. So Rashi translates mirirta by a French word that in English the plant has half a dozen different names. The official name for it is aconite. It's called wolfsbane, and it's a French word that. But here's a picture of it. It looks a little bit like bluebell, but it's a fairly poisonous plant. So that's the Rashi translates mirirta as that. Tosfos points out that elsewhere Rashi translates it as a different plant. Anyway, so if you feed that to an animal, then we're saying that the animal is kosher because that stuff is dangerous to animals, but not so much to human beings. Okay. Omer of Yehuda, since we mentioned chiltis, and we said that in the case of an animal, it could actually cause punctures in the stomach. Omer of Yehuda, high man de ochel tlosa tikli chiltis al liber rekona. If a person eats three measures, tikli means like shekel weight. So a person eats three shekel weights of chiltis al liber rekona on an empty stomach, mishtalach mashke, his skin will peel off. So Rashi explains what happens is that amount of chiltis on an empty stomach will overheat his body so much that his skin will peel off as if like he had a high fever. Rabbi Negershim gives a different explanation. What will happen is it'll cause him to feel so itchy that he'll claw off his skin trying to itch it. So therefore, in other words, it's dangerous. Omer Rabbi Bahu says, "Vidi have order." It happened to me something like that. But actually, had tikkur chiltilta. Now I had only eaten one shekel's worth of chiltis, and I was starting to feel this. The Eloidi Yasvi Bamaya, if I didn't know right away to sit in water to cool off, Mishtalach Mashkoi, then my skin would have peeled off. I would have suffered these effects. The Kiyamti Ba'asmi Achokma Techaya Ba'ala. So Rabbi Bahu says, by doing that, therefore, I was able to be Mekayim on myself, what the Pasuk says, that wisdom keeps its owner alive. In other words, because I had the wisdom to know this thing that we said that it can cause you to get overheated, and therefore you right away had to sit in cold water, then otherwise you would have been in big trouble. Marsha explains, by the way, the first part of the pasuk mentioned, earlier in the pasuk, it mentions the tzeil ha-chochma, the tzeil ha-kesef, that you have, sometimes you're protected by chochma, sometimes you're protected by money. So he says, the vort is, in other words, Rav Abohu is saying, if I hadn't known the chochma, I would have had to pay a doctor good money for this kind of treatment. Like this, I had the chochma to know to do it myself and save on the bill. Okay. Omer of Yosef.
I'll try it.
Yeah, okay. Omer of Yosef. So Rav Yosef says in this connection a similar thing. Haiman de ocho shitzire dei. If a person eats 16 eggs, va'aboy amguzi, and 4 nuts, walnuts, or some of you sorry, say 40 walnuts, v'shev butisa de parchi, and 7 seeds of tzlach, of caper berry, v'shosti rivi osa de dursha, and drinks the revius of honey, and does all of that with kufas tamuz in the summertime, a libere kona, on an empty stomach, misakar talya de libe, the connection of his heart will be uprooted. In other words, overeating like that during the summer and eating these kinds of things is going to be fatal to a person. It's going to cause him a heart problem. Okay. Let's finish off. The Gemara tells a case. Since we mentioned in the Mishnah a case where an animal was bitten by a snake, where we said it's kosher, but it's also because of sakonas nefashis. So the Gemara tells a case. There was once a deer that was brought to the house of the Reish Kalusa. To have a mafset karan basraisa, its back legs were cut off. Badke Rav, but Tzemes Hagidin. So Rav, as usual, as we've learned the last couple of days, checked the Tzemes Hagidin to make sure those weren't damaged. But actually, and then he declared it kosher. Well, now that it's kosher, Sover L'meichel Minei Bo'umsa. So Rav figured, okay, well, let me eat from it now. Let me eat some umsa from it. Umsa, Rashi describes, is it's not fully roasted in the oven. You salt it, like you need to get out the blood, and then you roast it a little bit over the coals. It's like rare meat. So he figured to eat some of it that way. But Shmuel says to Rav, okay, kosher, but loy chayish mar l'nikuri. Don't you have to be concerned that it may have been, why does it have injuries on its legs? Maybe it was bitten by a snake. Omale Maitakanta. So Rav says, okay, you're right, it might be. How should we check it out? How do we figure this out? So Shmuel tells him, no slebe tanura, put the meat into the oven. Don't just roast it a little bit like you were planning to do and eat it rare. Put it in the oven to cook properly. De'ihu bodik nafshe, and it will check itself. You'll see it'll self check. What does that mean? Oisve, he put it in the oven. Nafal tilchi tilchi, and the meat went as it was cooking in the oven, fell apart into pieces. Because in other words, the venom of the snake caused it to lose its structural integrity and to fall apart when it was cooked. So therefore, we see, yeah, it was bitten by a snake. It's a good thing Rav didn't eat from it. Kori Shmuel alei de Rav. So Shmuel said on Rav, we can apply on you the pasuk lo yo'un el tzadik kol oven. No evil thing will happen to the tzadik, because the Shmuel is saying with the hashgacha process that I was here, that I was able to give Rav this advice. And Kori Rav alei de Shmuel, and in turn Rav gave Shmuel a compliment and said, the pasuk applies to you, pasuk in Daniel, and that Nebuchadnezzar says about Daniel, kol roz lo onis loch, no secret is hidden from you. You, Shmuel, know everything. And that's how it worked out. So, kol roz, every secret, like onis loch, is not onus, is not an onus, is not beyond you. So, it's not concealed from you. So in other words, yeah, that Shmuel had the knowledge to do this, and that Bashkacha Prophet, he was there right when Rav needed him, because otherwise Rav would have eaten from this and been in danger.
And he wasn't a physician.
Rav wasn't a physician. Shmuel was. We find in various places in Shas that Shmuel. Yeah, we find that Shmuel was an expert physician. We find in a number of places in Shas. Yeah.
What did Rav do?
Rav, well, he was a Rosh Hashiva, but you're saying other than that, I don't know if it says what he did outside of that. We do know actually there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions that he spent 18 months apprenticing to a shepherd in order to learn all about the possible mumim that an animal could have. But other than that, I don't know.
Was Rashi really one?
They say that. I don't know if there's any solid evidence of it. He lived in Troyes. He lived in Champagne, which is a big wine-growing area. But does that Troyes is it's in
France?
Yeah, that's the area of Champagne.
No, Champagne is France.
And this is northeast, whatever. You could look it up. It is. But anyway, so people have the notion that Rashi was a vintner. I don't know if there's any solid.
Rashi was a what?
That people have the notion that Rashi was a vintner, that he grew grapes and made wine or whatever. Could be. I don't know if we have any solid evidence of it.
Champagne.
Fine. All right.